Hello, my name is Dirk Hartford. I'm very pleased today to have for my first podcast on Biznews TV, the business community, an old friend who I've known for all my adult life. I'm talking about someone who describes himself as an elder these days, and who's had a massive career in the transformation of South Africa from apartheid to the democratic order we live in today. Jay Naidoo, welcome. You know, I was thinking, Jay, when I thought, this is a very special day. Kosatu turns 40 years old today. And sometimes it feels like this 40 years goes in the blink of an eye. And then I realized the apartheid government only lasted 42 years. So Kosatu has already been in existence for almost that long. And you, as a leader of Kosatu in the mid-80s of the mass democratic movement, played a huge role in actually helping to bring that regime first to the negotiating table, to the unbanning, to the release of Mandela, et cetera, et cetera. Can we kick off just by going back to those days? What was it that the mass democratic movement in South Africa, and Kosatu in particular, did basically to bring about that situation?
Well, Dirk, it's been a privilege to be here with you on Biznews TV. I mean, you were my first communications officer in Kosatu in 1985. So this is coming back a full circle. So that's interesting irony of it. But for me, it also is a point where I see is that we all have a purpose in life. And whether you fulfill your purpose by being a business person or a trade unionist, whether you are rich or poor, white or black, at the end of the day, we all share the same goal. You know, we want to live in safety and security. We want our children and grandchildren to have access to quality education, quality health. We want opportunities to be opened for 65 million of people that are now citizens of South Africa. So if you ask someone, no matter what their position in life or ideology even, what is it that you want? These are the things, the basic things that give us harmony, give us social cohesion, and give us happiness so that we stop being so miserable in life. So I think that, you know, I look at it and say history is a harsh teacher. Apartheid lasted 42 years, as you said. The ANC is now governed for 31. But the real question is not the arithmetic. The real question really is, what have we done with the freedom we paid for in blood? Because you were there with me when workers' blood was spilled and blood of many different sections of society. I mean, people were being thrown off, you know, out of trains, murdered in their beds. We went through a horror story of conflict, war, and a low-scale civil war. The whole world was expecting us to burn. You know, we were at the edge of a precipice, but we found the courage, whether it was Mandela, whether it was leaders like de Klerk, whether it was ourselves in the union movement or people in exile, we found the courage to stand up and rise above our constituencies and find the common ground. And so, yes, in spite of what the world expected, we were a political miracle then and we are a political miracle today. So the question really is not, you know, do we want to go back to the past? Absolutely not. But the question, how far further could we have been if we had done what we vowed to do to deliver a better life to our people? And so, yeah, Kosatu was born in a time of fire, of state repression, past poverty, past laws, racial tyranny. And remember, you remember those days in 1985, the 1st of December, 40 years ago. I mean, actually, we stood in the Kings Park Stadium talking to thousands of workers. And what did my president do then? You know, President Bahai from Carltonville. He gave P.W. Botha 6 months to abolish the past laws, to release Nelson Mandela and all political prisoners, and to unban the ANC, the PAC, and all banned organizations. So, I mean, that time I had We had not one staff. You were not yet employed. I had no staff. I was squatting in the office of the National Union of Mine Workers. I had, you know, so all we had, not even a bank account, but all we had was courage and unity and a moral clarity that power belonged to the people. Today, we face different crises: corruption, elite capture, inequality, a collapse of trust in leadership. And so the lesson is simple. No liberation movement is immune from decay or any organization that stood for social justice, human rights, or workers' rights. Power must always be held accountable. And that's true of apartheid. It's during our apartheid struggle and for freedom. It's true today. So COSATU, you know, what was its contribution? COSATU was the spine of the mass democratic resistance in our country. We united millions of workers across color lines. It was not just workers, but young people, old people, rural people, women. And so we united millions of people across color lines. We shut down mines, we factories, parts. We built UIF, Youth and Civic Movement, the UDF, worked with the UDF, the United Democratic Front. We brought the campaign of international sanctions, and we made South Africa understand, and those in power, that they had to negotiate with us, because we were negotiators. We were pragmatists. We didn't want to burn down the factory. We wanted the factory owner to recognize that workers had rights. And this is what we did. We represented the dignity of the working class. And we helped birth the end of apartheid and the beginning of a new era that was the face of Nelson Mandela and what he stood for. And so the question is, what is COSATU today? COSATU must rediscover its soul. It must stop being the appendage of political elites and return to the trenches. Today's enemy is not the same. It's hunger, it's unemployment, it's climate shocks, it's corruption inside government and inside trade unions. COSATU needs a new social contract, that is anchored in trust building, clean governance, workers' education, youth leadership, climate and technological transitions. It does not need to evolve, Dirk. And in fact, if it stays in the same place, it becomes stagnant. It becomes irrelevant. And if it renews itself, it can lead again.
What do you think of the role of leadership in all of this? You know, if we think from a COSATU point of view, our current president was a leading COSATU person. The finance minister, Gwedi Mantashe, minister of energy, and there more. And really, from my perspective at the time, they were the outstanding leaders of our trade union movement, along with a whole bunch of others. If I think from the point of view of the trade unions, and particularly public sector unions, at face value, you can say they've done very well. I mean, our public servants are amongst the best paid in the world, and if trade unions at one level are only about improving wages and conditions, then certainly at that level, things are looking good. But the services that the state provides to people, to poor people, to the public in general, seem to be on the decline almost. There's not a commensurate level of satisfaction with the service on the ground from where our trade union members would be to the salaries and wages that they're earning. Have you got any thoughts on why that might have emerged?
Well, think about COSATU. I mean, we always represented more than organized workers who were union members. Our starting point is that it's not only undesirable, but impossible to separate the struggle of workers on the factory floor from the struggle in the broader society for our political and economic freedoms. That's the DNA of the COSATU I knew in 1985. I can't talk for COSATU today, and so it'll be good to ask them that question, because at the end of the day, someone has to look in the mirror and say, have I been true to the noble intention and objectives we set when we were part of the struggle for freedom? And I think that many leaders today in power cannot do that. because you cannot argue that our, like one political office bearer said, that I did not struggle to be poor. That is not Kosatu. That's an abomination of Kosatu and of our freedom struggle and of all the sacrifices we have made. You know, the Mandela generation were an extraordinary generation, and their goal was political liberation, deracialize the political superstructure of our country that assassinated our freedom and shackled us as slaves. And that's what they delivered together with all of us. The political miracle was a constitutional democracy within which rights of workers are entrenched, rights of everyone as a citizen is entrenched, where you have a right to strike, where you have a right to health and safety, where at the core of our constitution is a commitment and an obligation that we deliver a better life and we address the legacy of apartheid, economically, socially, and politically. Now, let's be honest with each other. We have betrayed that trust that people put in us in 1994. Because if you go to young people like I see in the Platinum Belt, communities here that are in a mining area that started off in post-apartheid South Africa, where there was new legislation that took the mining, the mineral wealth and natural wealth of our country and put it in trust in government to be serve the interests of our population, I can say without a shadow of doubt that communities here are worse off than before mining came. We have complicity of state officials in illegal criminal activities. We have spent months here of hundreds of ordinary citizens putting together an entire dossier that looks at illegal chrome wash plants that have crossed the highway now and are destroying our agricultural sector here, which is the citrus belt, which drives a lot of our export in fruit. It is also our breadbasket in a province where there are more unemployed people than employed people. And so I ask you the question, how can that be when billions of dollars have left this area to shareholders and communities are worse off? Children are in schools sitting next to chrome dump sites, breathing in coal, drinking water that is contaminated by chrome. How can it be that we're having situation of, you know, beyond the Marikana massacres, we are having a situation here where there are no pathways of hope, of opportunity, and even the basic rights of workers that are written in constitutions, the labor and social plans that we spend time as Kosatu negotiating, or the enterprise development plans, or the community responsibility schemes, none of that is operational. And the only beneficiaries I see are people that are gatekeepers, NGOs, consultants, and people that are part of the system. These gatekeepers have ensured that very few resources that are required by law to be spent in mining areas are reaching the actual people. Now, I'm in negotiations with the mining companies about this because, you know, reality, I know the law because I'm part of writing it and no one's going to fool me about it. And I've sat down with the CEOs of companies like Sibanye, Clearwater, and said, this cannot happen. And they've agreed to sit down to negotiate. And so I'm wanting to negotiate because we are not a poor country, Dirk. Why are we a pariah of inequality in the world? Why are more than two-thirds of our young people unlikely after 12 years of education to come out with skills and the opportunity to have a formal employment or a livelihood or enterprise? It's not about money. It's about political commitment, and it's about greed of the few that are robbing the majority. And that's what I am asking South Africans. I don't care what color, what politics you are, if you can stand up, all of us, and say, we had enough, like we said in the 80s. We had enough of this people who claim to represent us in a parliament, who come and make us promises when there's an election, but desert the people when we most desperately need them. And my call to business people is do not compromise anymore on corruption. Refuse to pay a bribe. Expose the bribe. Use the law. Use the mass media. Let's expose the corruption that is a cancer destroying our society. Why are we afraid? Because most of the systems, like we see even in the area of criminal justice, is now run by criminal syndicates. I'm not accusing all people in public service or all people in government. There are good people there. But why are we allowing a minority of criminal elements to penetrate the heart of our state that so many generations and so many people I know and you know paid for in their lives and losing their jobs? Why should we allow this to happen? And that's my only call, is that, yeah, I'm tired of sitting in another conference and writing another paper, another op-ed. It's time to rise now.
I hear you. When you think of what's available for us to try and bring about change, obviously there's organization on the ground that you're describing, and that is very important. But at another level, it's also the political dynamic that's unfolding. And it's quite interesting to see from my point of view that a party like the DA, which would have been associated, however unfairly, with the old regime, is now fast catching up on the ANC after 30 years in power. I'm sure you're aware that over the years there's been discussion within the labor movement in particular about the idea of having some sort of workers' party. It was felt that the unions through the tripartite alliance were too kind of tied up in with the ANC agenda and some sort of independent workers' party. I wonder what your thoughts are about...
What is a new party? You know, I think that if you take the last election, 40% of people did not vote. That's the largest vote. So what is the legitimacy in our lifetime where we know people that died for this vote? What is the legitimacy of democracy when the biggest vote is a no vote? So, you know, we talk about leadership. I have to see the leadership. I saw it in the G20, but can we continue after the G20 and actually address the problems and challenges of our country? So the thing is, I've worked closely with these leaders, like you're saying, the ones that came out of the union movement, even the ones that didn't. They were disciplined, they were strategic, they were rooted in workers and accountable. But today, leadership has thinned. We have too many careerists and too few visionaries. The new leaders are emerging in communities, in youth networks and climate justice movements, informal workers, rural women. And our task is to create the conditions where young leaders can rise without carrying the baggage of factionalism. Now, let me talk about left and right. You know, I don't understand these labels anymore. They're actually irrelevant. So let's take the United States. Who's left and who's right there? You know, it's like the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are two sides of one coin. So, yes, even the United States, like the rest of the world, like South Africa, we are all at a crossroads. Conditions in our countries are unstable. Institutions are weakening. Inequality is explosive. So what will a Workers' Party alone do with this? Nothing. The issue is values. Remember the values we had in our country. You remember the time, Dirk, I'm not sure if you were there, but when someone stole the check from the National Union of Mine Workers, which was the general secretary, was our current president, Cyril Ramaphosa. And we marched everyone in a line to the bank to find out who cashed that check. And eventually, you know, God forbid, I don't know what happened to those people, but no one stole from the union movement. No one stole. I remember disciplining and even firing people for corruption in COSATU. So what is a workers' party without values? We claim to have a workers' party in the SACP. What has it done? Nothing. It stood there and made a whole lot of promises and a whole lot of documents and a whole lot of intellectual discourses that no one reads. The left has failed, not because its ideas are wrong, but because movements became bureaucratic, corrupt, and distant from the people. What we need is a values-based civic movement, very much like the UDF, a people-driven, ethical, accountable movement. We need a Mamdani moment. Leaders who stand with ordinary people, challenge elites, and reimagine democracy in our time. So, you know, for me, if I ask, you know, what does Mandela represent? How do we replicate a Mandela? What is Ubuntu? What does it relate to the value charter? And I said, what did Mandela inspire us with? It wasn't something extraordinary, but he gave us a heart consciousness. We believed him. He was like our father, our grandfather. We knew he would not betray us. We knew his instincts were always in line with social justice, human rights, whether he's speaking to President of the United States, whether it's Clinton or Bush, whether he's speaking to anyone, the Queen of England in those days. He remained consistent. He listened deeply. He united us fiercely. He combined compassion and courage. And so what did he do? He became an expression of Ubuntu. I am because we are. It is a spiritual, ethical, and profoundly human thing. And it's not just exclusive Ubuntu to Africans. It's a universal truth. So the values charter for me, which I proposed during the whole G20, was an idea of translating Ubuntu into a governance network with transparency, accountability, service, dignity, and justice. So this is where I think we should be going. We don't need another plan. We don't need another conference. We don't need another set declaration. What we need is for people to do the job we pay them for and stop stealing from the poor and from a country. We should be zero tolerance. We need public transparency of the expenditure count of every single high-level official and every minister and deputy minister or premier and MEC in every province. I need to see, what are you spending our money on as a mayor? Or you are controlling the city purse. What are you? Look at Johannesburg. It is the premier country and premier city of Africa. The biggest, most powerful organized city. Look at what political parties have done to it. They've destroyed it. They've gutted it. They've ruined it. And they want us to vote for them again next year. I think this is where independents should stand up and say, we stand for something. Stand for something. And it cannot be the political parties that are making us promises anymore. It's citizens who are telling our politicians in the coming election, this is what we expect from you. And if you can't sign up and do this, we will not vote for you. I'm not going to vote on a premise, on some past history and your version of history. I'm not going to vote on it because you happen to be an organization I support in the past. You have to earn my support and my vote every day. And which political party deserves that vote? Actually, I don't believe any. I would support independence standing in this next local government election.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-buy cars.
A farmer.
What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about we buy cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW app?
It was just a runaround.
Cool cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Danay. Well, were they all out of ranges?
We buy cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Thank you. Moving on to some of the other issues that are coming up. More controversial, mainly. BEE in the business community is very controversial. I recall back in the day, there were trade union investment companies that were formed, employee share ownership schemes that would have been kind of both empowered workers in a particular workplace and benefit from the success of the company that they're working for. But on the other hand, it's alleged that they're like 100 Black people who were advantaged by BEE, who to the tune of something like R1 trillion is being thrown around. I wonder if you have any thoughts on how genuine empowerment can take place you know, capitalist economy that benefits both the owners and the workers.
Well, you know, this was a debate we had in the late 80s inside of COSATU. What would we do as companies were disinvesting? And it also came up in the early 80s when there were big pension strikes. And remember what emerged out of that as discussions between workers and the union officials is the provident fund industry. Because prior to that, a worker had to be, you know, it came about at a point when the apartheid state tried to change the law to prevent workers receiving their pension until they turned 65. And, you know, in those days, who lived to 65? Very few people, especially if you come out of the working class and the conditions that you worked under. So workers went on strike when government tried to change the law. And then we ended up in a negotiation that created a mutual governance of pension, of provident funds, 50% of trustees coming from the employers and 50% from unions. Then we addressed the issues that workers want. They wanted a lump sum when they went home because they wanted to buy cows. They wanted to build their homes. They couldn't trust the post office to send them a monthly check. And it wasn't in line with what working class wanted in those days. And so out of that emerged the idea that pension funds grew. And eventually we were negotiating and we had union trustees and all of them. What changed, Dirk? Nothing changed. The pension funds are still being used to build massive retail shopping centers and big buildings in Sandton and Cape Town and Durban. They're not addressing the needs of workers in the places where they stay. They're not addressing the economic need for us to create jobs and promote innovation, promote industrialization. It's a sham. They co-opted the union leaders. And so we end up with this tremendous resource that we have in state now becomes part of a whole money laundering for a political elites. Look at how much money has been stolen from the Public Investment Corporation. Look at Steinhoff. It's billions of rand squandered. And we can go over that story again and again and again. The union movement has failed through its union investment companies. In fact, it has weakened the union movement. It's allowed corruption to come into the heart of the trade unions, and it requires a complete rethink. So let me just be frank with you. BEE, like you said, it reached a small elite and actually made money for the big white companies that owned them before and the shareholders of those companies. They're the only ones that have benefited beyond a handful of people. With this trillion rand investment. Look at the economy where it is. So it did not structurally change inequality. It became a game of insiders. So real empowerment means that workers' share ownership is through an ESOP, or it's broad-based, not narrow deals. And what is broad-based ownership today? They talk about broad-based. No, it's not broad-based. We're just fooling ourselves, you know. It should be talking about skills, about entrepreneurship, about rural development. So, you know, this is the future. It's not the politics of a few connected billionaires, you know, that will now come and rescue. We do not need another messiah. In fact, we don't want another messiah. We want you to find that messiah of Mandela within yourself, in your heart, and be honest. So for me, the question of, you know, of leadership is what is the missing ingredient in South Africa within business, within trade unions, within NGOs, and within government, within society as a whole, within faith? Where are those leaders that could stand up and whose voice counted for something? Where are the people that we used to organize? Because I look at the challenges we face in our country. We organize people around rents, about transport, about access to clinics, about wages, working conditions, political freedom. Who's organizing now? Everyone thinks that organizing is how many fans and likes you have on Facebook. That's nonsense, man. Dirk, It's, do we really think we represent the people, or is the whole political conversation we're having in this country about the elites fighting for more while the masses are left outside the door because they're invisible to the elites, whether those are black elites or white elites? So if you look, for me, I'm taking my pension now to go invest in a farm to try and train at least a few people in a country where we have land access with abandoned farms, and saying, well, at least a contribution I can make as an individual is to get a farm. My son is prepared to train people because he knows farming. We train them in regenerative agriculture, and we start building the future. We build the future one step at a time, like we did when we started off with unions, and unions for African workers was illegal in the 70s, but we still organized. So I cannot understand any activist who claims to be an activist today saying, I don't know what to do. The people are discontented. They're frustrated. They are waiting to be organized. They are doing things on the ground. If you want to be an activist, stop, get off your butts and get off your Twitter and whatever social media and go and immerse yourself like we did in townships, in rural areas, in villages. And when you've gone there, learn to shut your mouth and listen, because these are people that are raising entire families on less than a dollar a day. So don't go there like a knight in shining armor believing that you are going to come and rescue people. This is what's wrong with activism. We never had that type of activism in Kusatu at the beginning. We sat with those people in the hostels, under sugar farms, and under trees, in broken down buildings, and we co-created something. The activism of today, professionally driven, and owned by big philanthropies like the Gates Foundation and Open Society that funds all of this, claiming to fund development. They have strangled development. They have removed the organizers from their base and their constituency. Now we have people that are running NGOs. They act no different than World Bank officials, actually, who are running around with some checkbook and then thinking you can train people to do farming with a weekend workshop. That's not organizing. That's not activism that I know. It's a flash in the pan. And I'm tired of that. I'm exhausted by people who claim, oh, we want to organize, but I need money before I can. I need money for transport and food and hotels before I can organize people. That's a fraught model, because you know our organizing costs not a cent. We were in the fields, or we're in the hostels. We are outside factories. I don't know what type of organizers we have today in the world, but they want to drive around in BMWs and be seen as like great guns and gurus coming there to fill empty heads of our people with what is the knowledge of what they need to succeed in life. That's something I have no time for.
Jay, that's a great place to end our discussion, I think. Lovely to see your passion is still firing away after all these decades. Thank you very much for spending time with me on BizNews TV.
It's been wonderful. And my appeal is to companies. Do better, because you cannot succeed in an ecosystem that is fraught with violence, corruption, inequality, poverty. You cannot survive in that ecosystem. We're a rich country, Dirk. We're an incredible country. Look at what is the biggest thing that came out of the G20? Is that the people, thousands of people that came here, they didn't talk about the organization, the logistics. They talk about the warmth, the generosity of our people, that they've never experienced the hospitality they experience here in Africa. We have something as Africa to offer the world, but we need political and economic leadership and social leadership that understands its task, that is prepared to be courageous, that is prepared to stand up, that are prepared to speak the truth to power. That's what my appeal is for. And as in nature, everything has a life. It's a birth, it's a life, and it's a death. It's a constant. The only thing that is constant in life is change. And if you cannot change, you become like the cassette machine. it disappears or the video stops. You have no right. You have to earn your right to be relevant day by day. And that's my call to business and to trade unions and to NGOs and to activists and to politicians. Thank you.